you say go now or what? I wasn't looking, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. So we're on right now, is that what we're doing? Okay, so. Oh my goodness. Okay, thank you, Jesus. Well, let's start out. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning,
sir. It's so nice. Oh my goodness. It's so nice to be here this morning and see everybody here. And it's such a privilege to be asked to give the testimony of how I came to the Lord. But let's start off in prayer, shall we? Heavenly Father, I come before you in the name of Jesus. And the desire of my heart this morning, Lord, is to honor you, to glorify you, to magnify you. So I thank you, Lord, for the ability that you give me to speak clearly. And I open up, help me to speak clearly, Lord. I give it all to you in the name of Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Well, grace, mercy, and peace to each person here from God the Father and our Lord Jesus Christ. Okay, so we have many, many testimonies. This is a testimony of how I came to Jesus. I was not, I did not grow up in a Christian home. My father was brought up as a Church of England altar boy. He was came from a Catholic Church of England background. My mother was had a Catholic background, although neither of them were practicing Christians. And they really didn't have a clue who Jesus was, truly. So when they married and they immediately began to start a family, they were moral people, but they were probably clueless as far as raising their children to know Jesus. That wasn't the center of their life. I think my father was very ambitious, and he had a good job. He was a pattern maker, a design engineer, a draftsman, and he worked for the Ford Motor Company. And he was a good man. He provided for his family. And my mother was a stay-at-home mom. That's what we call them now. But at that time, I mean, she worked before she met my father. She left school when she was 15, 16 years old. And that was the time back then, in the 40s, that they left school. 50s. They left school when they were 15, 16 years old. And this is in England, because I was born in England, Chelmsford, in the United Kingdom. It's about 30 miles from London. And they were good people, my parents. Good people in as far as the world's opinion of people. They were good people. My father never drank. He never smoked. There was no bad language that we used in our home. He was very, very, well, I say he was a strict disciplinarian. I don't know if he was or not. He was a very hard worker, and I didn't see a lot of him growing up because he worked so hard. But anyway, but he was very strict. When my father was around, we all, and when I say we all, I had a brother. He's 2 years younger than me. I was the oldest. And this is going all over the place, isn't it? But anyway, I was the oldest, the first child born in the family. And then I had a brother 2 years younger than me. And like I said, I was born in England, and we lived in England for the first 8 years of my life. And I was a normal child, really, except when I look back now, as I was thinking about things, there were some odd things going on with me as a child. We had a lot of freedom in England. In other words, there wasn't any television over there. I think we watched TV about 5 minutes, maybe every other day, 5 minutes of television. Can you imagine that? Maybe. That was a little children's program, 5 minutes. And it was like, I think it was called Bill and Ben was one of them, the Flower Pot Men. And it is actually on YouTube, and I've watched it since. And thought, oh my goodness, I can't believe that we were in, you know, just sat there with our, looking at these flower pot men.
My name is Bill.
Anyway, it was just so funny. But anyway, that was 5 minutes of television. And then we had the radio and things like that. But we didn't have a telephone in our house, you know, the time of no telephones. There were telephone boxes around, but no telephone. Can you imagine living without a telephone? Now we have to carry them around, you know, in our pocket, or you're supposed to. Of course, I don't. But, you know, there was a time when everybody had a regular phone, you know, in their house, but we didn't have one in England. But, you know, my growing up years, I had a good childhood in England. I had a lot of freedom. We lived on a council estate. It was in Basildon, Essex, which is about 30 miles from London. And there was a wooded area at the end of our street. And I always remember playing in the woods. You know, I don't remember much good weather over there. We were always excited when the sun came out. But we played out if it was raining, you know, or slightly raining, you know, cold, and the weather was always cold over there. But I remember gypsies when I was in England. You know, the gypsies used to come around. I don't know how often, but I remember them saying, sharpen your knives, sharpen your, and in their accent, you know, and they go around and everyone would come out to have their have their knives sharpened and things like this. So there's a different life in England, you know, from this country. I remember going into the woods as a little child, and at that time the gypsies had their big, massive horses. I mean, they looked massive to me because I was very little. But I remember going and it by myself, going into the woods, walking along the pathway, and then seeing, just standing there, and standing at the, you know, foot of these big horses and just looking up at them. They were just huge, you know, and then seeing these people around and, you know, strange, really. As a child, I would go, we had a little corner store. I'm thinking it was a corner store. I'm not quite sure what it was, but it was we call it the sweet shop. And there we'd buy sweeties. My mother would give us a little bit, maybe a penny or something, or halfpence. We'd buy a little bit of sweets or candy, you know, a little bit. But very rarely did we eat anything like that. But I remember, you know, even as a child, I was a little stinker, really. Although I didn't know that at the time. It was just, I was so quiet. And everything I did was kind of sneaky. You know, I remember, for some reason or other, we used to play house in the woods. And all this junk that people used to throw out, we used to go ahead and try and build little houses with it. And it was so cold all the time, I would go ahead and I thought, we need some fire. We need some heat, you know. So I would go, my mother kept a little bit of money on the mantelpiece, and I remember going up there and taking that money and going down to this little sweet shop and just standing there as a little child. I must have been about 5 or 6, okay, standing there and saying, my mother wants me to buy some matches for her to start the fire. Your mother? And I remember the woman looking at me, your mother? And going like this, you know, yes. Of course, I was lying. She didn't want me to buy any matches, but I wanted the matches so that I could start a fire in the woods. I mean, ridiculous thing. Or going to school, you know.
Was that right or wrong?
That was very wrong. But at the time, I must have known it was wrong. But as long as I didn't get caught with anything, I felt like I was okay. And I was a good girl. And everybody looked at me And they all looked at me throughout my growing up years and thought, Susan is a good girl. Stephen, her brother, is a good boy. You know, they're nice children. They don't do anything wrong. But I was thinking back over my life, and I thought, I did do things wrong. At 5 or 6 years old, as a child, my mother used to walk us to school, Swan Mead, and it wasn't elementary, I don't even know what they call it, but Swan Mead School. She used to walk me to school, okay? She would drop me off at that school, and I would go in like everybody else. Only, for some reason or other, at one point in time, I decided that, well, I didn't like school. I remember that very clearly. I did not like school, so I thought, well, instead of going to school, I think what I'll do is I'll go ahead and not go to school. So my mother dropped me off at the front of the school, and I pretended to go in, and then took off, and there was a playground next door. For 3 days I did this. My mother took me to the school, and I, you know, then I snuck off, and I went to the playground, and I, all day long, for 6 hours, I played. I played for 6 hours. I remember going, and for 3 days, my mother also came. This is how my, you know, as a child, she came in the afternoon to pick me up, you know, and I would be there. You know, can you imagine a little child doing something silly like that?
Was that right or wrong?
It was wrong. It was very, very wrong. And I tell you, it was dangerous. It was dangerous. I remember looking at people in the park and la, 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 la. I mean, everything was, what on earth I could have possibly done. But I do remember this, at the end of it. I remember laying down, it was like a little hillside, and down this little hill, I'm sure everything was totally different than what I'm thinking because I was so little. But the school, I remember seeing the school in the distance, and there was this, like, all this grass, and I was just kind of picking flowers. It must have been nice out, not pouring down with rain. But, you know, and then just kind of sitting down there, and then I was looking, kind of spying on the school and seeing what was going on over there. And then my classmates came out, and they all pointed to me, "Oh, Mrs. Pugh, there's Susan." I took off running, you know. Oh, my goodness, what a child. Well, they found out. The school sent a note home, and I got in big trouble. But do I remember what kind of trouble I got in? No, I don't even remember getting a spanking. That wasn't, there's no, I must have, because my father and mother were not against spankings. So anyway, growing up here in England, that was what it was like as a child. I was sneaky. As long as I didn't get caught, I thought I was okay. So I was a very naughty child in a sneaky way. But then my father was very ambitious, and he wanted to go to the United States. So they, he wanted to have get a job over in, I think he applied for jobs in the United States, Michigan, because the Ford Motor Company was there. And he, you know, had this ambition to leave England and go to this country. That's really their story. But anyway, but this affected us as children. You know, I was 8 at the time. It must have been going on since from the time I was 7. But he and my mother, you know, they decided they were going to immigrate. So they got everything in order, and they said we were going to America. Well, to me, America at that time, I had no idea what America was, where America was. I thought it was Africa. And I thought there were natives in this country, and they all didn't wear clothes, and they were all running around killing people. And I remember thinking and talking to the other children, yes, we're going to that place where they're killing everybody, and, you know, and they're running around without your clothes on and stuff, and I don't know if we're going to make it. You know. Anyway, when we did move, everything was different, obviously, and we came over to this country. It was Michigan. And Michigan's quite, you know, can be quite cold and lots of snow up there. But we must have gone in the springtime, maybe just before the end of school, so the summer would stop, which was amazing to me. But anyway, they have 3 months off in this country instead of 6 weeks in England at that time. But anyway, came to this country and everything was different. Everything looked different. You know, the weather was warmer, the sun was shining, and when we got off that plane, we went and stayed in a motel room, and my father knew had some co-workers that he knew in England that had also immigrated, and I remember going to their house and this woman giving us some cereal in the morning. But it wasn't cereal. I think we used to eat oatmeal. Every day we had the same thing in England. Oatmeal, hot oatmeal. Porridge, we called it. And with milk and sugar on and stuff like that. But in this country they had candy for breakfast. They called it Lucky Charms. And they put cold milk on their cereal. And I remember sitting at the table. Oh my goodness, this is so different. Sitting at the table looking at my brother. And we looked at one another. It was like, sweeties. They're giving us sweeties for breakfast. Anyway, so everything was so different. And then my father didn't have a car. We didn't have a car in England, And over here in this country, we didn't have a car. But my father soon realized he needed a car to get anywhere. But if everything's so far apart. And when we first got off that airplane, and we must have taken a taxi to the hotel and whatever motel, this little strip, little tiny rooms that you stay in. He soon realized he needed a car. But anyway, he found a place for us to live. He started work and the beginning of our life. Our life in the United States. What a culture shock. Everybody that heard me, oh, we want to hear you talk. Can you talk for us? We want to hear you talk. And I'm looking at them like, it was terrible. It was dreadful. You think no one could understand what I was saying. My first day at school, the teachers were, I remember them standing over me like this, looking at me. They kept asking me these questions, and my mind just went blank. What did they say? Well, things are different in England, okay? The pint over there, there's 20 ounces in a pint. In this country, there's only 16. A cup is 8 ounces. So at 8 years old, when they were asking me these questions, and I didn't know the answer of it, these questions, I would say things like, it's different in England. A foot is not 12 inches in England. I don't know what it is, but it's not 12 inches. A yard, no, 36 inches, no, a yard's not 36 inches. It's different in England. Everything's different in England. So anyway, in this country, I never had as much opportunity to do things wrong when I was younger. Our life was I never had the opportunity anymore just to go off. Everything was in a big neighborhood. We weren't allowed to go there. So I didn't have the freedom when I came to this country as I did in England. So things were totally and completely different in Michigan. And I grew up there. We were there for a few years, went to school. My family, my father and mother were good people. They weren't Christians. We never went to church in England. Ever. I don't ever remember a time we went to church. What was the point when, you don't even believe, although... But anyway, so everything was kind of moral, except for the fact that, there was no God. And as time went on, we just kept on going. There was catechism over in... when we went to Michigan, catechism was something I had no idea what that was, which is teaching the Catholic faith to children. I used to have to stay after school, and I don't know why I ever did that. It was the most boring thing to me. I didn't want to learn about anything like that. But at the time, it was absolutely meaningless. All of this stuff was meaningless. But anyway, as time went on, my father got settled in Michigan, and he was more ambitious, and we moved to Washington State. And that I was so excited to move. Every time we moved, it was so exciting, seeing different things and going different places and experiencing all this different life that people lived. And every place was different. People were different. So we moved to Washington State, and I have good memories of that. But again, it's so funny because catechism in Michigan Then we moved to Washington. There's this family that supposedly are Christians, and they have a Bible study going on. And for some reason or other, I have vague memories of them talking about Jesus, and, you know, but it didn't mean anything to me. And then even praying a prayer, there was something must have come up, and I prayed a prayer. And they said, you need to tell someone if you've prayed this prayer. So I remember going and telling a little girl in Washington, I've asked Jesus into my heart. Absolutely nothing. Knew nothing about what that meant. Nothing. It was absolutely meaningless. But again, I was about 11, 12 at that time. Then we moved again. And then we went to California. My father was really ambitious again, and he worked for Lockheed in California for 6 months. And California, I have nice memories of that, but again, I was just a child, 13 then. And then we moved from California, and no experience there as far as anything about Jesus in California. I don't have any memory of that. All during this time, you know, like I said before, in England there was no TV. In this country, one of the biggest shocks over here was, I mean, the TV. You could turn the TV on, the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, all of this, was Andy Griffith's show, and all these shows on television, and you could watch it for hours if you were so inclined. And because we didn't have the freedom in this country, as a child, I didn't have the freedom, what did we do growing up? We watched television. And I think television, on top of not having any real moral teaching, probably really influenced my life. So everything, all life went on, and we went back to Michigan from California after being there for 6 months. And then back again, and back into school, and all this kind of stuff, you know, reintroduced to friends that I'd left, and all that kind of stuff. From there we went to, after being there a couple of years, my father and mother thought, you know, we don't want our children to grow up in Michigan where there's so much wrong going on, and I didn't see any of it, but we're going to take them away from this place, and we're going to go to Canada. And we're going to go to Windsor, Ontario. So we're going to move completely over there. So we were uprooted again, and we went to Windsor, Ontario. And this was when I was 16 years old. And that's where all of the trouble, all the problems that they wanted to keep us children out of. When we got to Windsor, Ontario, that's when all of the things started in my life to go. That sneakiness that I had as a child, that may not have been so, during a few years there, you know, I was so contained. It didn't seem to come out maybe as much. I didn't have as many opportunities to be as sneaky in this country as I was in England and do all the different things I did over there. But gradually that started coming back again, and because my father was very strict, I kept having this thing on the inside that kept saying, I just want to be free. I want to be free. I want to have fun. I want to be free. And freedom to me at that time in Canada meant no authority. No authority in my life. I would be the only authority in my life. And when we went to Canada, my parents put me in an Assumption high school, which was, I think they paid for that school. But anyway, I started going there, and they started teaching meditation, world religions, Catholic school. And you know, as we were studying all these world religions, I thought, you know something? Because I want to be free, and you study Judaism, you study Islam, you study Christianity. Christianity meant nothing to me, absolutely nothing. But, you know, I thought, Judaism, forget that one. If I'm going to have any religion, it's certainly not going to be Judaism, with all their rules and regulations. you know, then Christianity, that's completely out, because I've grown up supposedly as a Christian my whole life, and that's nothing. And then there was Islam, and forget that one, that's just a counterfeit anyway. Even not knowing anything, not knowing a thing, looking at the Islam religion, well, it's a copycat, for goodness sakes. These were my thoughts, okay, growing up. So, you know, I thought, Buddhism, we studied that, Taoism, that's probably more for me. You know, no requirements. All I have to do is just kind of like meditate. I thought, well, that's easy. You know, we were even taught that in Catholic school by one of the priests there. You go ahead and you sit down, you sit down and you empty your mind and you just kind of meditate. Oh, my goodness, in Catholic school, ridiculous. But anyway, while in Canada, I began to meet some different people and get involved with people that, at the time it was, there were quite a large Arab population in Windsor, Ontario. So I got involved with some of the people from Lebanon and different places like that. But anyway, and there was a war going on and they had fled their country. But anyway, got involved with people like that. And as a result of that, I stopped going to school. And but I never told my parents. I just started this sneaky thing again and just stopped going to school. I would la, 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 have fun all day long. And then at the end, when it's time to come home from school, I was actually riding my bike to school, then coming back at the right time. And I did that, I don't know how long I did that for. But anyway, the more I did this, the more trouble I got into. Well, something happened, and this was all going to be exposed. All of these lies that I had been telling my parents and all of the things that I was doing during the daytime, all of a sudden, it was going to come out into the light. So I thought, oh my goodness, I can't stay around for this. And I remember sitting outside this house that we lived in, new house, right across from a golf course. You know, my father had done very, very well. We had done very, very well as providing for our family. And just kept, my whole thing was, I just want to be free. I want to be free. I'd ride for miles on my bike during that time. I don't want anybody telling me what to do anymore. I want to make my own decisions. And all I want to do is have fun. Fun, 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 fun. And when this came out, this was going to, you know, come to light. All the things I've been doing wrong, I took off. One morning, I got a few things together. I had a little bit of money, very little. And I looked at the map and I thought, well, you know something, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to leave, you know. And I did. I went on my bike and I took off and I went to London, Ontario, went by train with my bike, just took off. Didn't tell anybody because this was all going to come out in the open. So my father had always said, you want a job, you know, you go knocking on doors, you know, any restaurant or whatever, and I didn't have any problem ever getting a job. So I got to London, found myself a place to live real quick, and then went ahead. And I was a child, okay? I'm talking about a child doing this. And it was exciting. I thought, I never have to be told what to do by anybody. Again, I am now in charge of my own life. Well, my parents, because I had a bank account with very little money in it, but they traced me. They had the police out looking for me. They found me. And I remember them coming up. And all this time, you know, I never thought about what this would do to them. As a child, what my behavior, how that would affect my parents. My parents loved me. They loved me. By this time, I had a little sister. Very little. Victoria, and you know, I mean, they were just heartbroken. Anyway, they came up to London, Ontario, found me, and then it all had come out by that time, and they pleaded with me to come back home, and I thought, all right, you know, I'll come back home. Came back home, never settled back home, couldn't settle there again, went to school, da da da. And just felt like I cannot stay here anymore. I want to be free. I want to do my own thing. You know, so I ended up leaving again and going to Windsor and getting a place to live down there and stayed in a house. Now, during all this time, when I said I wanted to be free, I would look up, you know, and look up at the sky and the expanse of the sky and look out because we lived on fields behind us. And I just wanted to be free, you know, free. This was what life was all about. I wanted to travel. I wanted all these, had these aspirations. But anyway, it doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. I went down. I was in Windsor. I was in a house that was converted to rooms, and we all rented a room out. And there were all these girls in there. I got and had another relationship. I was involved with all different kinds of people at that time. But anyway, all these girls in there, and there was a Christian girl in there, in this house that I had found a place to live in. And there was another girl living in there who was had some mental issues, some mental problems. But anyway, I developed a relationship with this woman that knew the Lord. And she was obviously praying for me. She could obviously see I was in a big mess, which I was, because at that time also, as I moved out on my own, there were motorcycle gangs around, all kinds of things. I was doing things that I had, you know, thought that I would, well, I didn't even think about it, you know, at the time. If it's fun, I would do it, you know, what I thought was fun. I remember going at that time into, with this motorcycle gang, and going into a place, one of their, I can't remember what they called those places where they're, it wasn't a hideout, it was a clubhouse. They had this clubhouse out in the middle of nowhere, you know, broken down, horrible. My mother kept a clean home. You know, we lived in clean surroundings. Everything was always nice and clean. Went to this, going into this place, we went, you know, walking in there, and it's full of smoke. You know, again, we never smoked. My father, my parents never smoked. Full of smoke, but it wasn't just regular smoke. It was, you know, different kind of smoke. And these people were just sitting around like out of their mind. Now, that is one thing about me at the time, you know. I wanted to live. There came a point in my life, I didn't want to sit in front of a TV anymore. I wanted to, what I call, live. And living was doing whatever I wanted to do and having fun. I did not want to watch other people do things. I wanted to do it. So I went into this place and I'm looking around and these people are offering me all these drugs. Well, I had been taught that drugs were wrong. So I never, ever took drugs. Ever. Okay? So I looked at these people and I said, do you want this? No, I'm fine the way I am. I remember saying very clearly, I am fine the way I am. I do not need anything to make me feel better. I feel great, you know. And they look at me like then they were out of their minds. You know, I thought, goodness, you know, this is ridiculous. But I still, you know, kept going on. The Lord really protected me during that time, but I had no knowledge of Him. Anyway, living in this house, this girl was praying for me. I became very, very sick living in this house. I don't know exactly what it was at the time, but I remember they took me to the hospital. I had a very high fever, and she took care of me. And as a result of that, her taking care of me, she asked me to go to this prayer meeting with her. And because she had, you know, really taken care of me over those days, I felt obliged to go to this prayer meeting. And at that time, there was the Catholic Charismatic movement was going on. And Jesus had become a reality to the, had woken people up in the Catholic Church. And this is beyond me. I knew nothing. But I didn't even know what a prayer meeting was. But anyway, but here she was. She asked me to go. So I went with her to this prayer meeting. And they were all singing these choruses. And there were some people from the Catholic school that I had gone to that I recognized, some of the priests there. And but they were jumping up and down and, you know, at the time praising the Lord, and I had never seen anything like that, ever. You know, and I walked in and I'm thinking, these people are crazy. You know, and everyone was hugging one another. We weren't a hugging family to start with, you know. We never grew up hugging. But they were hugging everybody, and I thought, oh my goodness, and they were coming up to me and trying to hug me, and I, you know, oh, I need to get out of here, you know. And then when they were praising the Lord, I remember sitting beside or behind this woman with all her children along there, and, you know, her children would do something, and she would be jumping up and down praising like this, and then she would bang them on the head. Be still. And I'm thinking, even my parents wouldn't do that. You know, it was not a good experience. But anyway, and they kept saying things like, do you know Jesus? Do you know Jesus? And I thought, what does that mean? Do I know Jesus? What does that mean? No, I don't know Jesus. And I'm fine the way I am. Anyway, time went on. Got out of that meeting, got out of that place. My father said, why don't you go to England? You can go into nursing over there. And, you know, he wanted to get me out of all the problems, all the trouble, all the stuff I was involved with. And at the time, you know, I thought, a new place, new life, that sounds good to me. So I ended up going from there, getting out of all that mess, and going off to England. And as soon as I got there, I stayed with my grandparents. It was meeting all my family over there. You know, we'd gone back from time to time during the years. But living over there, I thought, oh, this is wonderful, you know. But I had to go into nursing. Okay, so I had to find a job. And the start of a new, you know, new life. But you know something? I wasn't changed. I wasn't a changed person. I was just taken a mess, taken out of one messy, horrible, messy situation and transported as a mess into another situation that was okay. So I ended up at a hospital working there as an auxiliary nurse, trained and all that kind of stuff. And living as a young woman, girl, child, in that place, and then working, taking care of people. And I loved it. I love taking care of people. I love the nursing side. I just absolutely, the mess that I was in as a person, that was one thing that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed taking care of people. But I don't have a lot of memories of all this. I just know that the mess I was in obviously didn't stop. And as much as I could do possibly wrong, as much trouble as I could get into, as sneaky as I was, I remember meeting a woman years later who we had, actually was a part of the church that had started in England. And she, the sister in charge there was Sister Chanel. And I must have terrorized that place. I remember climbing in and out of windows. I think it was on the second story. And for some reason or other, there was a curfew there at night, I think. And I think for some reason or other, I was climbing in and out of windows. And people were climbing in my windows. And all kinds of messy stuff going on. Anyway, apparently, I caused havoc in the place. But and I can't remember all this stuff, but caused problems. Wherever I went, I caused problems. Because I was a mess. An absolute mess and knew nothing. But anyway, in the hospital I was staying, and I again became very, very sick. My theology at the time of life was, you know, there was no God, and that when I died, I would be buried, and that was it, you know, and I was fine with that. But I became very, very sick again. And while in the hospital, looking after other people, I was having to be looked after by Sister Chanel. And she was very, very good to me, very kind, very gracious to me. As I look back now, I'm absolutely amazed that wherever I went, There were people around, do you know Jesus? And she was always saying, do you, you know, trying to get me to come to these meetings. Well, there was a lot of elderly people around that area. But anyway, I recovered from this sickness. And she was the one that really had a big part of it. But anyway, as a result of that, I was indebted to her. So she would go ahead and ask again. She would say, why don't you come to this prayer meeting with me? We have an evangelist from India, Herbert England. He's there. Why don't you come to this meeting with me? And I did not want to go to this meeting because it was a bunch of old people around. So I got a friend to go with me, and I said, okay, well, you know, we'll go there. And at that meeting, I was very lonely in England during that time. After going there, nobody around, just being by myself, and I couldn't get, there wasn't as much fun in that area. But anyway, I remember going into that meeting and sitting there, and this man, Herbert England, talking, and he, at the end, sharing his life in India, and then at the end, giving a salvation prayer, prayer for salvation. He said, I want you to pray this prayer after me. So I went ahead and I prayed the prayer. And at that time, it was a Jesus come into my heart. And he said, if you've prayed that prayer, he said, I want you to tell somebody after this. So I thought, okay, I don't even know why I prayed the prayer. But I did. And I went outside after the meeting was over. And this was the changing, this is a life-changing thing for me. I went outside and I said to the person that I was with, I prayed that prayer. I asked Jesus into my heart, into my life. And I remember standing there and going, oh! I just shocked. He's real. Oh my goodness, there's a God. He's real. And I mean, it was like, oh my God, he was so real. I thought, I never had, from that point on, there was no excuse with me that there was not a God. I could not say that. I knew there was a God and Jesus was his son. I didn't know anything else. I knew that Jesus was real, and I had asked him in, and everything seemed to change at that time. But because I had been such a naughty girl, I was thrown out of the hospital. They threw me out, and it's terrible, but I couldn't understand at the time. I thought, I'm a good girl. Why would they throw me out of the hospital? And I always thought like this. I came from a good family. I was a good girl. I was not a bad girl. But of course, people were looking at my life from, and they could see that I was not a very good girl. Not a very nice girl. But anyway, from there I had to go back and, you know, live with my grandparents for a time. And I wrote a letter to my parents, who were in the United States. They had moved back to Michigan. And so I sent them a letter over, and then they sent me a letter, and our letters crossed in the mail. The letters that I received from them as I was living with my grandparents there for a few weeks was that their lives had drastically changed. Jesus had come into their lives. And I'm reading this letter, and they sent me all these tracts, you know, and about Jesus and about how, oh my goodness, because one of my favorite subjects was in school was all that terrible stuff, evolution. I used to excel in that, in the things that were wrong, it seemed, studying those things. But anyway, but they sent me all these tracts on evolution and how wrong it was and how God created the world. And I remember looking at this thinking, oh my, I read every single one of those things. I thought, oh, this is amazing. This is amazing that my parents, Jesus had become real to me. I knew he was real. And he'd become real to them over there. How amazing is that? I remember going rushing down, you know, and telling my grandparents, who weren't Christians, oh my goodness, you know, the same thing that happened to me has happened to them over there. You know, anyway, they came over to England, they came over to pick me up and get me back to the United States with them. And everything was going that way. They gave me some money before they, because they, I had to get a visa to go back. I had to actually immigrate to the United States again. Anyway, they got all my paperwork almost finished, and all I had to do was complete a little bit. But what happened to me was I didn't complete it. Didn't complete the paperwork. They left me with a Christian family, a Catholic family, and I was to stay in their home until all my paperwork was completed for me to then travel by plane back to the United States to join my parents and then go on from there. But while in that home, I then got involved with some things that weren't right. And again, just wanted to have fun. So I went ahead and ended up not going back. And I took off again. And I went traveling again by myself, ended up in Ilford, London, Ilford, Essex, and got into more trouble then than I'd ever gotten into. But during that trouble, no matter where I went, there were people around that knew Jesus. But by this time, because I was so focused on doing wrong, and I hadn't finished doing what I wanted to do, I was extremely rebellious. One thing I hadn't mentioned with my father and mother, you know, they were loving parents. They loved me. I was their daughter. But they, towards the end of the stay with them, you know, I had become very, outspoken. I had no love in my heart for my mother and father. I had become very cold on the inside towards them. But anyway, because sin always produces, it never goes back. Jesus is the only one that paid the price completely for sin. If you do something wrong and that sin is not confessed and you don't turn away from that, sin always produces more sin. Things always get worse. They never get better. And so progressively, that's what happened to me. So as I went off again and did and had my fun, what I thought, did whatever I wanted to do, I got into a worse and worse state. Things got worse and worse for me. And I got worse. On the inside, I remember being so hard. And at that time, you know, I knew, although I knew Jesus, I said, I don't want you in my life. I'm not finished yet. Can you imagine saying that to God Almighty? I don't want you in my life. I'm not finished doing what I want to do. I knew him. I couldn't talk to him. I knew he was there. And he was right there. I knew God was real. I knew Jesus was his son. And I knew that I did not want him. And it seemed like everything I tried to do, having fun, I always saw it as him, messing things up for me. Always messing things up. So in the end, I remember, because I used to smoke at that time, which is a very bad thing. But anyway, I remember, and I had asthma, but I hadn't had an asthma attack in years. But I remember I was getting ready to go out and have fun, had this asthma attack. And I remember saying to the Lord, you are not going to spoil my fun. You are not going to spoil my fun. I am going out, and I am not having this asthma attack. And you know what happened? That asthma attack went. Completely. It left. And I went out. That asthma attack was not from the Lord. But I was so determined so determined that I was going to do what I wanted to do, and it was on a, I was on a path of total destruction. Total destruction. Because the people I had gotten involved with, they'd been really bad people before. These people were on a totally different level of bad. And so things got progressively worse and worse and worse. Anyway, I ended up getting into another house with a bunch of girls. And while there was all kinds of dreadful things going on because people were involved with the occult and they heard voices in their heads. And I remember one girl in particular. This is truly amazing. She was a school teacher and she had these voices constantly talking. She was totally tormented all the time because she had been involved in the occult. Well, being tormented, you know, I knew the answer was Jesus. I knew that if she turned her life over to Jesus, he would set her free. I didn't want freedom, but I thought, I knew the answer for her was Jesus. And at that time, there was a man going around. His name was Trevor Deering, and he was a minister in the Church of England. And this girl, who was absolutely tormented, I remember being downstairs. I had a room downstairs. Let me say this. I was very lazy. Very lazy and very messy and very dirty at that time. But anyway, I was in this room, and I heard this banging on the ceiling. Bang, 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 bang. And she comes running down the stairs, knocks on my door like this, and I'm thinking, I've got to the door. What's going on? What's the matter? She said, I don't know. She said, objects are just flying around the room. She said, they're flying around the room. You know, and I'm thinking, and my bed keeps coming off. Well, I could hear the bed coming off the floor. Bang, 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 bang. And I'm thinking, goodness, this girl needs help. So we had heard about Trevor Deering, and I said, why don't we go to this meeting? We'll take the bus, and we'll go to this meeting, and I think he'll be able to help you, this man. Because I thought, even at that time, and don't ask me how I knew, but I thought, this seems, you know, like she's got demons and stuff. But anyway, so we ended up going to this Trevor Deering meeting. And at that time, people were coming from all over the country. And there were lines outside of this church building where people just wanted to be prayed for and be delivered. And so this was all in the newspapers. Everyone was hearing about it. So here's my friend and I. We were standing there, and she said, I don't want to go by myself. I said, it's okay. I said, I'll be with you. I'll go with you. We'll go together, you know, I'm thinking. So we were standing in line for her to be prayed for, and the closer we got to this man, and he was all dressed in his Church of England garb, you know, robes and all that kind of stuff, and he was praying for these men, and people were being set free. But I didn't want to be free at that time, okay? I was still in a mess, but getting towards the end of it, tired, feeling like I, not having any feelings at that time, because sin always, it's death, absolute death. So anyway, here she is standing there, and she, we're getting closer. There's a couple of people in front of us now, and I'm just there supporting her. I don't want prayer, you know. But anyway, here she is, and the closer we get, the more agitated she is. You know, she's really agitated, and I'm looking at her thinking, what is wrong, you know? We're getting closer to the man, and then all of a sudden, she takes off screaming. Screaming, and this is quite a big church. She takes off screaming and starts running out of the church building, and I'm standing there looking at this man in front of me, and then looking at her and thinking, I just felt plain embarrassed, okay? And then kind of just stepping out, you know, backing off and getting out of there. And then thinking, where did she go? Well, she was on the ground outside. She was on the ground. And she was, there was a number of people around her and they were praying for her. And That day, she was set free. Completely and totally set free. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. She was writhing on the ground and things like that. But anyway, absolutely set free. Her whole life turned around. And she'd become totally committed to Jesus. And that's all she could talk about, was Jesus from that point on. You know, when we got back on the bus, like I said before, I had smoked. I got back on that bus and I tried to smoke again. I couldn't smoke. It made me violently sick. The thing is, I liked smoking at the time because I liked doing things that were wrong. I was so upset that I couldn't do the wrong things. Anyway, progressively, so she got saved. Her life changed. She never had the voices anymore. I was very happy for her, but I was still on this path. Things progressively got worse for me until things got so bad I had just a numbness on the inside and a deadness on, because that's what sin does. It produces death, and it produced death in me. And I got so low, and my parents, again, ended up coming back to England. But, of course, I didn't know anything because we didn't have any. There was no way of contacting me. I hadn't left anybody my address or anything like that. So nobody. Anyway, the police got involved. There were people. I caused problems. I was like a Mr. Magoo. I'd go into a situation, and I didn't have great eyesight either. I'd cause all these problems no matter where I went. And then I would walk out of it. And people were afterwards that people were going to kill me and all this. I'm thinking to myself, and I'd stand there and think, well, why? I'm a nice person. I always thought I was a nice person. And now, you know, I'm looking back now thinking, I can't believe it. I was just totally selfish, self-centered. All I wanted was fun, seeking freedom. But, you know, freedom is not being free of authority. Freedom is not being free of authority. I got so low, I hit rock bottom. My parents found me. And they said, why don't you come home with us? And there was I remember all these different options I had at the time. But I was so sick of everything. So sick of these people. And also, because of all the other things going on and the, you know, people out to kill me and all this kind of stuff, I thought to myself, you know something? I didn't feel safe anymore. I didn't feel, you know, so when they said about coming home with them, you know, I came to the point where I said, okay, yes, I will. But I also knew this, that going home with them meant this. I was at the end. I was at the end of doing what I wanted to do. That was never going to happen again. So I said to the Lord, I said, if you still want me, if you still want me, because all this time he had pursued me. He kept showing up everywhere. And I just shook my fist in his face and said, I don't want you. I don't want you. Get out of my life. But he never did. He just kept pursuing me more. No matter where I went, there were always these people around talking about Jesus. Couldn't get away from them. No matter what country I was in, they were everywhere. So I came to the end, and that was it. You know, you can have me. If you want me, you can have me. And he wanted me. He actually loves me. But I was someone that did not deserve his love. I didn't deserve his mercy. I didn't deserve his kindness. I certainly didn't deserve his forgiveness. But he forgave me. He forgave me of everything. And he made me clean. He made me completely and totally clean. In fact, he washed me whiter than snow. He gave me a new heart. And he changed me. He changed me. And that was something. From that time, when I said, because I've always been all out for whatever, you know, I did. It was 100%. So when I came to the end of myself, it was 100% for Jesus. And he knew that. He knew that if he could keep me alive, he would have me 100%. And that's what he has. He has 100%. I've never gone back. I've never thought anything different. You know, there is nothing in this world that has any appeal to me. Any appeal. There is nothing that I want to do to displease him. He has been so kind and so gracious to me, so good to me. He ended up getting me back, and that was a struggle, getting me back to the United States with my parents. And thank you, my darling. He ended up getting me back, and the Lord did. And of course, this, you know, he's changed. He changed me. I knew he changed me. I knew, you know, that my life then belonged to him. But you know something? There was a lot of growing. We all have a lot of growing to do. But when I got back, I'd never heard anything about forgiveness, okay? I'd had a lot of anger, resentment, bitterness on the inside of me. I never forgave anyone in my entire life. For anything. But that's one of the first things that he impressed on me and taught me, basically, was forgiveness. How I had to forgive all those people. Of course, I had done some terrible things. But, you know, I had to forgive. I had to release all those people. So I began to do that. I began to pray for these people that had hurt me over the years. And all this anger and resentment and bitterness and hatred that I had built up on the inside of me, I began to forgive. I began to pray for these people. My father, who I'd been so rebellious to him, because I was rebellious against all authority, hated authority, thought that was what was holding me down all those years. My father, I remember us going, I was living at home at that time, new Christian, new life. My parents were new creatures in Christ Jesus. Everything had changed for them. Everything had changed for me. There was an excitement. The Lord had so much in store for us as a family. And, you know, we didn't know what the Lord was going to do, where the Lord was going to take us. There was people, all our family, all over the world. It was so exciting now. But, you know, we have a lot of changing to do. And obeying authority, I knew the Lord had put my father in authority over me. But I had an opportunity to do something, go out with someone, go somewhere. And I remember I said to my dad, I said, this person has asked me out to go somewhere, you know. I said, do you think that would be okay? We were walking through a store at the time. Would you think this would be okay, Dad, if I did this? He looked at me. And he looked sick. looked sick to his stomach. He said, I don't think that would be a good idea. I do not think that would be a good idea if you did that. I looked at him and I said, okay, I won't do that then. I won't do that. The look of shock on my father's face, because all of a sudden now he has a daughter that is actually going to listen to him and do what he says. I went back home and I lived under my parents' authority for as many years as I was away from their authority, you know, and submitted to them. So, and then the Lord took me from there. But the Lord changed my life completely. Completely and totally. I'm so, so thankful to Him for revealing Himself to me, for pursuing me. And I've never, ever looked back. I've never, ever had a thought of doing anything different than giving Him 100%. Ever. There's nothing worth, nothing in comparison to Him. Anyway, that is it.